meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. You'll know my next guest, Robin Sachs, as a ADA. That stands for Assistant District Attorney in Los Angeles County. She has a new book out called Predators and Child Molesters. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I wanted to bring Robin on and actually all my guests tonight to talk about the new events happening in the Anthony case down in Florida. Hi, Robin. How are you?
Hi there. How are you?
Welcome back to the show. The circus continues. Sadly, Kaylee Anthony has been found recovered. None of us should be shocked. We should be heartsick because we knew it would probably happen. But now the meter eater's being blamed. Leonard Padilla is running out of stories to tell, so he was talking about his kid's cat the other night on Nancy Grace. It just keeps continuing on and on. The DA and the Sheriff's Department down there, and now Dr. G and everyone involved, they're doing a bang-up job. The defense are running, hiding behind their tails, I believe. And now the story will continue with a trial. Your thoughts?
Well, I look forward to seeing what the trial is going to be like.
Yeah.
Just in terms of if their big burning question, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners' question in their mind is, have we all, being the public, are currently aware of all the evidence, or there are other evidence, pieces of evidence that they've withheld, that we're going to even learn more, which is leading to the most, probably the biggest question that we all have, which is why?
Yeah, exactly, and I think there will be. And I'm going to sound like a broken record all night tonight, but I think the Sheriff's Department, FBI, the investigators, everyone involved on the prosecution side have done such a good job. Yeah, defense lawyers are going to try and spin it different ways. That's their job. We get that. But now we're starting to hear, and it goes back to the old story, Robin, and I want you to comment about citizens getting involved. We have this meter reader, Mr. Kronk or Mr. Conk or whatever his name is, poor guy. He goes out, he actually phones three times because he notices something. The third time is the unfortunate time that Kaylee's remains are actually found. But now, and we've talked about Richard Jewell, the Olympic bomber hero who was vilified in the press and by the defense until he was vindicated and then some lawsuits. Now we've got this poor guy who the defense and all the conspiracy nuts are going to go after. How does that affect people, you know, John Q. Citizen, that you as a DA and me as a cop and other investigators and law enforcement people want to help us? You know, when they see this, they're going to say, well, no wonder we don't call, because guys like Kronk just get attacked.
Well, there's so many questions and so many comments I have actually about this poor guy. I mean, yes, it is poor meter reader guy in a lot of ways, but at the same time, it's the thing, and I know that we've thought, you think, and I agree with you, that the Orange County Police Department and people on the prosecution side have done an amazing job. It's just kind of unbelievable, given everything, that a meter reader would have had to call three times. They've been looking, combing, following up on leads. It's just one of those kinds of things of, like, I cannot believe this little turn of events, that it's even something we have to deal with, considering how much media attention there has been. And that's exactly what the argument's going to be, is how could this have happened? And so, and I don't think that most of the time that these kinds of things happen in cases where you have a citizen who has to call three times and get scrutinized in that kind of way. But at the same time, I really am surprised that in this case that we're seeing that at all. And the other comment that I have about that is that really, this is one little tiny kind of snafu,
exactly,
course of an investigation. There, given all the things and given all the people and all the components and all the investigation and putting, linking the dots and putting the pieces together, there are going to be spots where there's going to be human error and a little bit of issues. It's never perfect, but considering everything that they have in this case, if this citizen mishap where there has to be three calls becomes a issue to find reasonable doubt, I and everyone else will be outraged.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad you said that. That's why you're one of my favorite guests. Robin Sachs is here. She's an ADA out of Los Angeles County. You hear her Tuesday nights on the Justice Interrupted radio show. She's an author, and I think next week she starts on the Deal or No Deal television show, Opening the Suitcases. No, she doesn't do that. I don't even watch that. I don't even watch that dopey show, and I'm not sure why I said that.
I don't know about.
But listen, you know, that is so true. It's human error, the poor deputy that went out there, and we've heard stories about a snake, and we've heard other things, and he may have cleared to see. People make mistakes. This is so minuscule in this case, as far as I'm concerned, that shame on anyone who goes after this this meter reader for coming forward with this, because it happens. You know, I think back to a case, I think it was last year, I can't remember the location, tragic case, two little kids missing, and we all saw the video time after time of the sheriff's officer, female I believe, walking by an abandoned vehicle, looking underneath the vehicle but not checking the trunk, and then, you know, a few hours later they decide to come back and check the trunk, and there's the two little kids in there. Would she have saved them if she had opened the trunk? And it's human error, it happens, but going after this meter reader, it's just not right. We've got forensics now, and
I have to say one thing. I'm sorry to interrupt you, and just one little point. Just in the event that Orange County, Florida prosecutors are listening to your show, which you get so many listeners, it wouldn't surprise me if they look for tips on your show, because you have awesome tips all the time. So I have to throw this one thing out there.
Yeah.
I feel I would be remiss if I didn't. As an advocate, if I were the DA trying this case, I would bring that out from the beginning, saying, yeah, you're not going to like to hear this, you know, when I'm picking my jury and voyeur. I'm going to say, I would say right out to the panel, you know, you're not going to like the fact that there was a mishap and there was error. Yeah. Are you going to equate any kind of error to being any form of reasonable doubt, and really fleshed out, and as I call this, pricking the boil and just dealing with that from the front? Because once you kind of deal with it and dismiss it, then the case seems pretty darn clear.
Yeah, absolutely. Get it out in the open. You screwed up. You know, that happens. You know, seeing the sheriff, Barry, I believe is his name, last name Barry, the medical examiner, everyone involved, and the emotion. I'm not sure if you caught the press conference the other day.
Yeah.
In their faces and telling the story. We all raise children. You know, dealing with the death of a child, especially a young child, and how this story has gripped the nation and will continue. All you have to do is look at a picture of Kaylee Anthony. Good God, she's angelic. And she's with angels right now. She's in a much better place than any of us will be. And whoever took her life, if it was her mother, courts will tell, you know, she'll get her due course in time. But this case, you know, this case is not just about the death of this child. You know, it's obviously a big part of it, but it's about, and we're going to get into your book here in a bit, Predators, Child Molesters is Robin's new book, protecting our kids. The statistics, I had Clint Van Zandt on last week, of parents killing their children in the United States is incredible. It's so sad. If we can't protect children from their parents, or children can't feel safe with their parents, who can they feel safe with? It's just so sad.
Oh, it's heartbreaking, and actually I vote for Sheriff Barry for the next DA, because yeah, frankly, if you can bring that human element and that human sadness of what the feeling is for a child, and now we have little Kaylee is being everyone's little baby in a way, and you do look at her and she's so angelic. That is what the case gets to. Too often we get hung up in forensics and bodies and locations and cop talk, as you will, and the sheriff who came out there and put out the feeling, that exact feeling is the feeling that we want to make sure a jury has. Can be able to feel. And that's the part that's so upsetting about this case, is how can a mother do this? I have a 6.5-year-old daughter, and literally she was, you know, asking me, how could, you know, what happened to that little girl? And it's very hard to explain in an appropriate way how something can happen like that to a child.
Robin Sachs is here, and we're talking the Anthony case. The trial will, you know, there'll be, like you say, voir dires, and there'll be hearings, and there'll be motions, and there'll be whatever. But this is going to come to a jury trial, I believe, a long, drawn-out jury trial. The experts are starting to form on the defense side. We're hearing names like Henry Lee and Bodden and other names have come forward. The dream team. I hate when they say that, because it makes me think that I'm dreaming even hearing about all these big shots. It's they're being paid to come forward, or they're doing it pro bono because of the publicity. But now the vultures will come forward even more so. The media, the types of ways of covering these trials. And as an ADA, and I've asked you this question about other cases before, are you wanting this trial, because you can't get away from it, to be covered as much as it's going to be covered?
Well, we should all remember that, you know, don't see your TVs yet. This case is a long, long way from hitting the four walls of a courtroom where you're doing anything other than continuing it and doing housework and business in terms of motions. But this case is not going to trial soon. So I will be curious to see if the dream team that we see now is the same dream team that's going to be in attack by the time the case goes to trial. Right now, in terms of investigation, and when the case is all over the television, the people who are able to volunteer and be there, if they don't have the cooperation and the respect and the relationship with the defense bar, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the dream team members get subbed in or out based on what the needs of the case are at the time. In terms of whether or not I would want the case in a trial or not, you know, I'm kind of torn, as I always tell you. I think media does bizarre things, but I look at this case as close to probably a Scott Peterson case as, as possible. It's got all the sympathy, all the evidence, and so I don't really see the media being it's possibly, you know, ruining this case. This isn't a celebrity case. It's kind of a case of example, other than the tipster situation with the meter reader. Has everything gone right? I mean, you've got forensics, you've got a motive, you've got lies, you've got all of these, you know, you've got the body found within a quarter mile of where she grew up and lived, where she buried her cat. You've got all these consistencies. So why not let everyone see how great it is in the criminal justice system?
Every jurisdiction does things differently, but something that I raised my eyebrow and scratched my poor bald head over was Dr. G coming forward and saying cause of death, homicide undetermined. Should she have waited for the toxicology to come back? Although I understand with toxicology and bones, you're not going to get exact levels, but if there's chloroform in them bones, and I'm not trying to talk stupid, should she have waited for that? That one kind of overwhelmed me a bit. And when you get the cameras and all of a sudden everyone's in front of them, are DAs and medical examiners and even defense attorneys prone to make those types of mistakes, if indeed it was one, because of the cameras?
Well, I think that I think that in this case, because of the chloroform and pending toxicology, it's kind of a safe way to go, believe it or not. Even though it does seem kind of quick, then you have the excuse of, we provided an answer to media, this was our quick first impression based on this, and then it was pending toxicology and further results. Not to mention the fact that every minute of every day, we have been waiting on the news with bated breath about whether or not there's been an absolute 100% positive identification, because no doubt the family and the defense theory would be they should still be following those tips, and they should be checking out and wasting more governmental resources. So at the same time, I kind of think, just to say to everybody, this the unfortunate turn of events is so, at least it puts that conclusion and shows how quickly we can have at least the conclusion as to who the body that was found was, and then make the scientific exact determinations later. I don't think it was so rash.
Robin Sachs is here. She has a new book out called Predators and Child Molesters. The link to how to buy it from Amazon is on the show notes, and you can go to Robin Sachs's webpage, which is robinsachs.com, and learn more about it. Let's talk about the book, Predators and Child Molesters, as a sex crimes prosecutor. This is your cup of tea. I'm not making light of what you do or making light of tea. I don't know why you compare the two. It's like shaking a stick at something. There's more sexual offenders out there than you can shake a stick at. I don't know why anybody would want to shake a stick at a child sex offender. You'd want to shake a bat or a gun at them. I don't know. But let's talk about the book.
Well, this book was evolved out of a case, actually, that I'm handling in Los Angeles. And basically, there are many, many cases every single day where following speaking with a child victim and then conducting an investigation and working with law enforcement in terms of handling the case, where I spend hours and hours speaking to parents about answering their questions, from all the questions of what's going to happen with this case, what's going to happen, is my child going to need to testify, how do I know that my child is telling the truth, are they going to turn into perpetrators themselves? And there are literally, you know, each parent has at least 15 to 20 questions, rightfully so, if they are a good, appropriate parent, that is, that they're going to ask me in terms of how a case is going to be handled. And by the same token, if I go out to dinner or I'm out and speaking to the public or I'm out teaching or something, people ask me a whole different set of questions. That, you know, how can you do the job you do? How prevalent is really this problem? Do kids get tormented through the criminal process, etc.? And from that, I literally sat down and wrote down a list of the questions and realized that the same questions came up over and over and over again. And instead of putting parents into the position where you have to go, you know, cruise 20 websites and compile, you know, all this data yourself and figure out that, you know, just get rid of the truth from the lies and the opinions from the facts and fiction, I decided that I was going to find one and make one succinct place where parents can do it. And I convinced my editors to do it in a format that would be, you know, paperback, cheap, easy to read, one-stop shop, if you will, for all, anything a parent would want to know, whether their child has been victimized or not, you know, from questions of, do I let my kids sleep over their friend's house? What happens if my kids' friends' parents are divorced and it's the dad's house? Do we let them sleep there? Are all men child molesters? Can boys be molested? So forth. So that's the basis of the book.
You have an excellent foreword in the book by Mark Klass. Let's talk about that and him. Is there a greater victim advocate than Mark Klass?
Mark Klass is phenomenal. I mean, he really is. He's 100% dedicated not only to, you know, dealing with his own personal situation, which is, you know, was clearly his motivation for his involvement, but also staying on the cutting edge of the new aspects and new components of child sexual assault. His big research right now is really dealing with human trafficking as it relates to sexual assault, and I'm constantly amazed about how dedicated, how wonderful, and how generous he is with his time and his help. And his foreword is phenomenal. His organization, which is classkids.org, is phenomenal, and I'm thrilled and honored that he wrote my foreword.
He tells it like it is, and that's what is so impressive about this individual. You know, you can be a talking head on a television program and be as boring as watching paint dry, but this guy is a victim, is obviously his family went through hell. You can't think of anything more terrible to go through than what they went through, but he's out there, and that's what amazes me about the Mark Klasses and the Beth Holloways and the Mark Lunsfords, and I could go on and on. Drew Kessie's, the families, the victims' families, is how strong they can come forward, Robin, because of their own tragedy, to come forward and use their strength, what they learn from that, to help others.
Absolutely. And he does it with passion, conviction, and he does have a sense of humor. And he's not, you know, a bitter victim advocate. He's positive and he's passionate and he's contagious. And when I, you know, hear him on Nancy Grace and all the other shows, he adds a different perspective and puts things in a way that makes you really just, you know, makes your heart really sink out for the issue and the cause.
Justice Interrupted, you, Stacey Dietrich, and Susan Murphy Milano kick butt every Tuesday night on the internet with your radio show. Tell the folks who don't know about it what it's about.
That's just interesting, as you know. Actually, it's just the three of us trying to be you because we love you so much. And we, you know, thought that the one thing that we have going that you don't is that we're three women. Other than that, we do a lot of what you do and trying to complement what you do in terms of replicating your passion, but really using the format of an advocate, the police officer, and the DA, all of us together, putting our heads together to try to highlight cases where justice is interrupted by the actions of others. We try to highlight cases that are both in and out of the media, provide tips to people that from our prevention aspect, and be in a place where we can really focus on the regular cases where the regular victims and then the regular professionals who are out there doing this work day in and day out.
You know, and it's something that you don't see or hear or even read about, is getting the three experts like you three are to sit down and talk about the system the way that it is and the way that it's working and what we can do to fix it, and bring victims and those that have had justice interrupted. I just love the title, an avenue, a voice to come forward. And there are just so many cases. Let's talk a little bit more about that. Let's talk about a typical case or a typical story that you might hear on your radio show.
Well, there's no such thing as a typical case. As you know, each case has its own component. The one thing, though, that cases all have in common and that it's, when it comes to crime, you know, there's only so many ways to see a battery, an assault, a murder, a missing case, a missing body, a rape, a sexual assault, child abuse. There's only so many dimensions to those kinds of cases. While there's different nuances and different issues, the cases are generally the same. Some person, in our cases that we evaluate, has been completely either ignored, wronged, put off, or simply is a case where, that needs some straightening out by the professionals, you know, something that we need to help explain in a way so that the media gets the right message about what a case may really be about. And those are the kinds of cases that we hear about. The three of us, the nice thing is we represent different parts of the country. I'm over here on the nice West Coast where today, you know, right before Christmas weekend, it's 70 degrees. You're probably freezing your, you know, butt off over there in Canada.
Yeah.
And that's what Stacey's doing. That's why she's going to Florida. And we've got Susan in Chicago. And so we have all a different world perspective, different state perspective. And we're able to take our experiences within our own agencies, own states and jurisdictions to put our minds together to help victims from wherever they may be.
Yeah, and you're doing such a great job. That's Justice Interrupted Tuesday nights on Blog Talk Radio. The book is Predators and Child Molesters. Check out the show notes at scaredmonkeys.com. Get your credit card out and buy one as soon as you can. Robin Sachs, it's always a pleasure. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Take care, ma'am. Bye-bye. And Red sends an excellent email. We're talking about shaking a stick. You know those analogies? I said, why would you shake a stick at somebody? But Teddy Roosevelt said, speak softly and carry a big stick. And we need to carry even bigger ones for child molesters. You know the Walking Tall movie, the big stick that he had, the big bat that he had, and he cleaned up? That's what I mean. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We're going to be right back with Diane Fanning. She's a true crime author. She has written a book called The Pastor's Wife. Remember the case of Mary Winkler, the lady who shot her pastor husband? And get this, she's just signed a contract to write a book about Casey and Kaylee Anthony. Should be interesting to talk to Diane about that. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we're back. You'll know Diane Fanning as a guest of my program from the Women in Crime blog and as a true crime author. She's written a new book called The Pastor's Wife. If you remember the Mary Winkler case, we covered it here on Scared Monkeys Radio. And she's going to be writing a book about Casey Anthony, and that should be interesting to talk to Diane about that. Welcome to the program, ma'am.
Well, it's good to be here, Dana.
Welcome back. It's happy holidays and all that sort of stuff. Where I'm living, it is minus 43 degrees outside, And if you,
why don't you move?
I wished I could, but I'm froze to the chair. I can't get up. So anyway, I wished I could. That's for sure. The pastor's wife. I can remember covering this case, doing stories on it. I think I interviewed a friend of the family or a friend of Mary Winkler. I can't remember now. But what a case! In fact, she's out of jail now. You'll remember Mary Winkler as a person charged for killing her pastor husband. A fascinating story. Let's talk about the book.
Well, the amazing thing to me with this case and the outcome of the case was I do not believe that anywhere in this country would you ever find a man shooting his wife in the back while she's sleeping and getting 67 days to serve.
Absolutely.
And it just, she had an excellent lawyer. In fact, if I ever kill anyone, I would like to have Steve Parise for my attorney.
Jeez. Okay. You know, and I would too.
He was excellent. And Mary herself, unlike a lot of defendants, was a good witness.
Yeah.
And she presented herself as very innocent and sweet. And boy, can she exaggerate.
You know, when it comes to the story, and we'll get into, of course, we want people to buy the book. And if you go to the show notes at scaredmonkeys.com, we have the Amazon link up there for you. But this is how you play not only to the camera, but how you play to the jury, how you play to the investigators, how you play to everyone. And she was just excellent at that, was she not?
She was. I think initially, though, that the investigators got on to her right away. I mean, when she said things like that, I don't know, I got my self-esteem and my ugly came out, that pretty much told them what went down in that bedroom in Selmer, Tennessee.
Let's remind the folks what went down in that bedroom, because some may be saying now, yeah, I remember the name, but I don't remember the case exactly.
Well, Mary and her husband had been married for about 10 years, and they had three little girls. And one morning, Mary woke up, took the shotgun, and shot her husband in the back while he was sleeping. Now, the reason she did this, I believe, as do the prosecutors, she had gotten involved in a Nigerian scam.
Mm-hmm.
And the bank was saying, look, what you've done is criminal, but we can make this all right and everything go away. You just have to come into the bank with your husband.
Yep.
And the morning she was supposed to go in with him, she shot him in the back instead and took her little girls to the beach.
Was there, when she came forward and she started to talk about the issues and what went down, there was a lot of speculation about how he treated her. I'm going to use the burning bed analogy, although it's not quite the same. But was that ever brought up?
Mary, when she was first with the police, she said nothing bad about Matthew, nothing at all. She didn't criticize him. She said it was all on her. And all of us out here were speculating that there, you don't just do that.
Right.
It just doesn't make sense. We didn't know about the Nigerian scam. We couldn't figure out any motive. We figured there had to be something going on. And it turned out that things were not all that rosy in the Winkler household. But the story kept changing. First, it was that he was controlling and bossy. And her father is saying, but there was no indication of abuse. Then you go a few months further down the road, and her father is saying, I saw her with a black eye, and I asked her if she was an abused wife. And then you go a little bit further down, and he's saying, I knew she was being abused, and I was begging her to leave the home. And it just, the story kept getting bigger and bigger, and that's how big it was when it got to trial.
The DA in this case, the name just slips my mind for a minute. When the final sentence came down, there was a lot. In fact, I'm sure I even did a show on it as far as appeals and this is crazy. You know, 67 days. What's going on here? What was the reaction from the DA?
He pretty much turned and walked away without a word initially.
Yeah.
And he was not talking to the media. His boss down at the regional DA's office was taking those calls, but Walt Friedman was just keeping his mouth shut. And I think that he saw the whole case as a pretty logical first-degree murder case. And he presented it as a logical case. But he was forgetting one important thing, and that is he had a predominantly female jury. And women will inevitably, as a rule, look for some sort of emotional response. And it doesn't matter whether it's emotional response to the perpetrator or to the victim. But he didn't. He should have beat into the jurors' heads about this is a 32-year-old man who is the father of three girls. Here are three little girls who lost their daddy because of what this woman did.
Yep.
But he didn't do that. He played only on the logic and on the facts of the case and didn't bring any theater really into the courtroom.
Diane Fanning's here. She's talking about the new book, The Pastor's Wife. And a little bit later on, we'll talk more about Anthony and the fiasco that's going down in Orlando, Florida. Diane, I know I've asked you this question before, but all you got to do is turn on the television or open a paper, or listen to the radio, or look on the internet. There are these types of cases go on and on and on, and the cable news channels cherry-pick them because they want to see something that the public's interested in. And obviously the public is interested in these kind of cases. But how do you as an author decide on a story to write? Because there's so many of them out there.
Well, there has to be something that grabs me. Sometimes, you know, I've had a couple of cases where it's been young girls who have been responsible for bringing a serial killer to justice.
Right.
Or in other cases, it has been a woman who is a victim who just shouldn't have been a victim. And I want to understand, how does a woman who is this strong and this capable and this competent ever become a victim? Because I think there's important lessons for people to learn there. But sometimes I don't pick the cases out myself. In this case, for instance, with Casey Anthony, the publisher wanted me to do the book, and they asked me if I would.
No, there's a story and a half. Tragically, Kaylee Anthony has been found. None of us should be shocked by it, although it took quite some time to find her. It's just a tragedy of the story. This story has spun 360 degrees every direction it could, right down to high-profile media people, to bounty hunters, to hell, poor Leonard Padilla is even running out of stories to tell now. I heard him on Nancy Grace the other night talking about his kid's cat that died. There's only so many things that you can report on this story, but it's a story and a half. It's a doozy, and it's far from being over. Your thoughts on Casey Anthony and poor Kaylee?
Well, I'll tell you, Dana, as much as I've been reading and been aware of and interviews I've seen and documents I've been through, I didn't realize it, but there was still a little part of me that was sitting in there holding her breath, hoping that Kaylee was really alive.
Absolutely. All of us do. Yep.
Oh, man. And to find out that for sure that she wasn't was just, I mean, it was like a punch in the chest.
Mm-hmm.
That little girl was absolutely gorgeous and absolutely lovable. I mean, well, for that matter, what little two-year-old is not lovable and sweet? I mean, it's rare to find one
exactly
that you don't just want to hug and love all over. And to think that not just some woman, but the woman who was the mother of this child, who carried this baby for 9 months in her body, could turn around and harm that child, is sickening. And the proof's not in yet, and we don't know for a fact that, we don't know everything, we don't know for a fact that Casey is guilty of this crime, but just the thought of it is repulsive.
You know, I'm not an author. I've interviewed a lot, and I've read a lot, but you look at plots and subplots, and you see this story, right? You know, the big story is, how can a mother do this to their child? The parents of Casey, right down to, you know, the sheriff, Barry, the investigators, the defense lawyers, this poor water meter reader guy now who's being vilified by some press and the conspiracy theory nuts that are out there, to a cop that probably made a mistake that could have found Kaylee in August. But, you know, we're human. Mistakes happen. You know, this is going to be a big story. You might have a 500-pager here.
Well, yeah, I tend to be able to get a whole lot into fewer words, but I still think I'm running to a long book this time, and I would imagine that the publisher is expecting that.
You know, one of the stories, and I'm not sure if you can answer this, Diane, or not, but one of the stories that people are going to ask me when you're on the program tonight talking about this, who's actually doing the book? Is this the Anthony family? Because we all sit back and we shudder to think that a family is going to benefit from the death of their child.
I am doing this book. If the Anthonys would like to talk to me and give me input and tell me about their granddaughter, Kaylee, I will be happy to listen to them and talk with them about it. But I never give money to people for a story. I mean, the bottom line is you can buy a story, but the truth is never for sale. And so I don't do that sort of thing.
I knew that. I just wanted you to share that. And when it comes to the family, and I get in trouble every time I say this, but I love getting in trouble. I've talked to Cindy, and I've talked to George Anthony. I've interviewed Cindy twice, and I've talked to George off the air. And I go back to the very first 911 call. I go back to the panic in Cindy's voice on the telephone.
Yeah, yeah.
The damn dead body smell or whatever. I go back to my private conversation with George Anthony and hearing the desperation in his voice, to see what the family has gone through, to see the absolute hell that they've gone through, because, yeah, sure, they're in denial. It doesn't take a guy with a psychology or psychiatrist degree to tell you that. They want to protect their daughter, but how do you approach something like that as an author? Because you want to be fair and balanced. I'm going to steal that from Fox News for a second, but you also have to look at the big picture. I don't think that the grandparents really had anything to do with this. They may have known after a while what happened, but initially, no way, because they were just as scared as anybody.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, and it is that first phone call that makes me pretty certain that's the case of what's happening here, and that they are not involved. And at times, watching this story unfold, I've gotten very frustrated with Cindy and George because of their denial.
Yeah.
But then I step back for a minute and say, wait a minute, you're a mother, you're a grandmother. How would you handle the situation? What would it be like for you? And when I think about that, I understand my heart breaks for them. And to me, that's how you approach a victim's family member. And that's what they are, is Kaylee's grandparents. And you approach them with compassion, because that's the only way that anyone could possibly approach them. And I don't understand people that have been cruel and ugly to them. I just don't get it.
Yeah, people are strange. The public has an obvious craving for this type of a story, but some get just too involved. Let's talk about Leonard Padilla, someone who I've interviewed several times on the program, but it's just to the point now where the show is done, Leonard. It's time to go out and catch some bad guys that have skipped bail. Enough's enough. Have you got a whole chapter set aside just for Leonard?
Well, I think he is going to be... has to be part of the story.
Well, sure he does, yeah.
And he's an unusual part of the story, and it might be a little bit of comic relief. It's almost like the way he acts sometimes, you start to feel like he didn't have a life before this case, and as soon as he lets go of it, he's going to die.
Yeah.
You know, it's... but it's so easy when you care about something to get obsessed, and
yep.
I think that's what happened to him.
His heart was in the right place.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think he started out looking at it one way and then learning more and looking at it another way, and I think it's been an emotional roller coaster ride for him.
The media has used him too much. He's to the point right now where he's just, you know, you could grab a guy off the street to come on and talk more sense than what he's talking about, because he's running out of stories. But Diane Fanning is here, author, her new book, The Pastor's Wife, about Mary Winkler, is available through Amazon. Check out the show notes, and she will be writing a book about Casey and Kaylee Anthony. Last question just before we finish up, Diane, the trial. I just had Robin Sachs on, who you know, and I agree with her that the trial is going to be a long ways away yet. I know they talked about March, but with delays and experts and these, I hate that term, dream team, but the dream team that will be involved and all this sort of stuff, it may be a while before we hear the whole story, what comes out in court. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's going to be a big part of this too.
But you know, this thing might not ever go to trial.
Yeah, well, you know, that's true too.
You know, this thing, I thought from rather early on that this looked like an ideal plea bargain case, the way the evidence was going to be coming in, and now it's here. Before there was a body found, I would have thought that the defense would have been rushing to get this into trial because they had a better chance of acquittal without that. Now that it's come, it seems like it's plea bargain time.
The you know, exactly, and the honorable thing to do, and who am I to say that, I'm just a show host, is for Mom to come forward if indeed she is guilty and accept responsibility. The book is The Pastor's Wife, the author Diane Fanning. You see her on the Women in Crime blog. She's a true crime author. The link to buy The Pastor's Wife is in the show notes. Thank you, ma'am. You're always welcome on the program, and happy holidays to you.
Same to you, Dana. Nice talking to you again.
Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to take a break here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We're going to come back and talk to the executive director of Texas EquiSearch, Tim Miller. I'm peed off. You can figure out what peed means with the defense attorneys, with some television commentators. Geraldo Rivera, I'd love to have him on the program right now. Lay off, you people, lay off this guy, the meter reader that found the remains. There's no way, no way he's involved in this case. There was some sloppy police work where maybe when he phoned the first time, they didn't search as well as they should have. It's human error. It's a mistake. You get that out of the way right away. But they need to lay off this guy. They need to lay off the conspiracy theory crap. And I want to bring on Tim Miller to talk about just that and what it's like to be involved in something like this. Because Tim's going to take some heat, too. You know, why didn't Texas EquiSearch find Kaylee? What about this meter reader? Did he plant the bot? All this kind of nonsense and crap that's going on? You know, shame on you, Geraldo. Your gutter journalism, you're better than that. You need to stop. I know you're friends with Jose Baez, but it's time to look at the big picture and look at the evidence the way that it's being presented. We're going to be right back here on Scared Monkey Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll see you in a second.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. I'm going to continue on with my rant a little bit here. I think his name is Kronk, and if I'm pronouncing that wrong, I'm sorry. The meter reader that ultimately discovered the remains of Kaylee Anthony. I can remember having Tim Miller on the program a few weeks back, a month back, whatever, and when Tim, rightfully so, and thank God he did, called off the search for Kaylee in that particular area because there was so much water, he said to me that, Dana, you know, she may not be found. She may not be found in the way that we're searching right now, but somebody might come across her. It could be somebody out playing golf on a golf course, or somebody walking through the woods, or maybe a meter reader that comes across a bag. And if he phoned the police three times and the police missed it once or twice, it happens. It's called human error. I'm bringing on Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch to talk about this now because I am just so disgusted with some of these defense lawyers and some of the media who are going after Texas EquiSearch and this meter reader for not initially finding Kaylee. Hi, Tim. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Dana. How are you?
I'm good. You know me. I'm a pretty easygoing guy. I don't get wound up too often. But this whole blaming the meter reader, blaming you, blaming your people, is just so wrong. Let's talk about that.
Well, you know, one thing the media does, sensationalize stories to just get attention and the entertainment. And unfortunately, I know between us, Kaylee's story was certainly not entertaining. It was you know, anything but extremely emotional case. One of the probably right there the most emotional one we've done over 8 year period of time. And you know, the meter reader back then that was always saw something of, you know, law enforcement came out and didn't see anything. He went back there, and, you know, I kind of questioned myself about the meter reader when we was when we were down there searching, because this happened the August 11th, 12th, and 13th. And, of course, Tropical Storm Faye came in on the 18th, and I kind of wondered why the meter reader didn't come to us when we was down there searching, saying he was doing some, you know, law enforcement, check that area out good enough. But you know what? It would not have done any good.
No.
Because that is the time that all that area was so far underneath the water. And you're right, I suspended that search, and one of the best choices I ever made. When we went back the second time, that area was still underwater. And so, you know what, everybody tries to do the best they can do, and of course they're going to be the ones that criticize out there, and they're the, you know, anybody can play Monday morning quarterback, but I just wonder how many people that are doing all this criticizing were actually out there searching and putting the effort in that everybody put in. So, you know, it's one of the things we look at what we have done, look at our successes, and have we made some mistakes along the way? Yes, we have, but I don't feel that we've made not one single mistake in the Kaylee Anthony search. So, you know, my heart goes out to the meter reader also. Defense attorneys are just that. They just want to try to prove some doubt somewhere or another, no matter who they go after, try to prove that doubt. But I feel as though when this gets to court, that the Orange County Sheriff's Department has done a magnificent job. Everybody involved has done a magnificent job. And I certainly anticipate that Casey Anthony will never see daylight again. And, I hate to say it like that, but just what the entire country was through. And, you know, I remember telling Mark and James, Anthony's attorney, when I very first met him.
Yep.
Be careful. Everybody that got involved with this case in any way got body slammed. Now, even meter readers. So, you know what? We just pick the pieces up, go to the next family that has a missing person, and continue doing what we're doing. And unfortunately, I heard today, I don't know if there's what truth there is, and that there's just going to be a private funeral for little Kaylee, and then I understand that the Anthony's attorneys are wanting to go ahead and take her down on little stuffed animals and stuff to set up at down there at the corner close to the site where she was found. And I think there's a lot of people upset over that. Number one, it's not even Anthony's property, so I feel that stuff ought to be able to stay there in respect to Kaylee. And on the private funeral service, I think there's a lot of people upset about that, but people stayed so very, very much in the bottom of their heart that want to go give the final respects to Kaylee and say their goodbyes. And I'm afraid that the Anthony's are not able to face all the people that will be at that funeral, and again, it's not about the Anthony's, it's about Kaylee. And from what I'm hearing now, you know, we're not going to be able to give it a final goodbye in that respect.
Well, that is unfortunate. Well, I've got you, Tim. Tim Miller is here from Texas Equus Search. I want to talk a little bit about the sheriff from Orlando Sheriff's Department, Orange County Sheriff's Department, Sheriff Barry. Anyone that saw the press conference the other day, and you're a guy, Tim, that talks from the heart, and I have a whole new respect for that sheriff now. To see the look on his face, to see the way that he did that press conference, he acknowledged Texas Equus Search, which I thought was great. To see the emotion in his eyes. My last guest that I had on here said that the sheriff should be, when he retires, he should be the next DA down there. There's a guy who took this case to heart, who is a true professional, who did an excellent job, who took a lot of heat, but he is probably one of the best I've seen in a long time. Your thoughts on Sheriff Barry?
You know what? Sheriff Barry and that entire crew down there, I can't recall ever work a better organization than what they did. And I remember very early on, Dana, when I was there the first time, and I was on Nancy Grace's show, and I kind of upset with the Anthony's, and actually, before we really started a real search, I just wanted to pull out of there. You know, Kevin buried himself all day the next morning and asked if he could talk with me, and he said, please, he said, I'm going to ask you a favor, would you please stay and conduct this search? He said, I know it's expensive. And he actually gave us $5,000 to help out with expenses. So early on, when I felt as though that you know, everything was against us on that, Kevin Berry is the one that made that personal phone call to me and said, please stay and help us. So from the very beginning, they took this case serious. And you know, Dana, back there, going back to that meter reader, back there in early August, you got to remember it was over 30 days when Kaylee was gone before she was even reported missing. So basically a cold case before it was a missing person case.
Right.
But then also, you know what? They were following all the possible live sightings of Kaylee, too. They did not have the evidence back of the decomposition in the trunk of the car and different things that would have led them to really believe that Kaylee was not alive anymore. So, you know, to go ahead and criticize them, it wasn't until way after that when the stuff got back from the lab and suggested that, yeah, little Kaylee's not alive. So, you know, there was just getting thousands of phone calls on possible live sightings, and back then they were following up on every one of them. And then some things that were suspicious out there, that back then I can see why it was not taken as serious as maybe it should have been. But then again, I'll play that Monday morning quarterback, but you know what? They back then at that time was trying to find a live Kaylee.
Yep.
So, were any mistakes made? Absolutely not. But something may be overlooked, possibly. The executive searcher overlooked some things before. I mean, when the searchers were out there searching, Dana, we got literally hundreds of phone calls that somebody found a bone. Somebody found a bag that had children's clothes. Somebody found children's toys out there. And you know what? After a while, it's like, you know, let's either go check it or not check it or what. So, I know exactly how easy it is to overlook something, and we certainly have done that ourselves. So nobody did anything wrong. One person did something wrong.
Yep.
And that was to take the life of Kaylee.
Yep. And that person will, we'll be judged accordingly for sure. Tim Miller, thank you. I know you're busy, and I appreciate your time. Thanks again for coming on the program.
Dana, as always, thank you.
Okay, take care, my friend. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch. Yeah, no, nobody's done anything wrong here. The person that should have the blame pointed to them, the only person that should have the blame pointed to them, is the person who took the life of Kaylee Marie Anthony. We're going to be right back with a former DA, author, one of my favorite guests, Spitfire in her own right. You know Wendy Murphy. She's been all over the Anthony case, and she's going to join us in just a minute here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
We're back with more of the Dana Pretzer Show on ScaredMonkeysRadio.com.
Okay, continuing on with our coverage of the Kaylee Anthony case. Sadly, Kaylee Anthony's remains were found. No one should be surprised at that. However, this story has gone every direction it possibly could. In fact, like we were talking with our last guest, Tim Miller, now even the poor meter reader who sadly found the remains is being blamed. The conspiracy nuts are out there. Leonard Padilla is running out of stories to tell. He's talking about his cat now. But the mainstream media and the cable news shows keep bringing our cowboy friend on, someone who I've been very impressed with as far as her coverage on the Anthony case, is a former DA, law professor, and author of the book, And Justice for Some, Wendy Murphy. Happy holidays, Wendy. Welcome back to the program.
Likewise to you, Dana. Thank you very much.
Leonard Padilla was telling us about his cat, and I'm so sad about died and how sad he was about it. So you can throw in any kind of animal story that you want, but I'd like to stay I'd like to stay on topic. Anyway, this story is just so sad. The meter reader is getting blamed now. Tim Miller, a Texas Equisurgeon, is getting blamed now. Zanny the Nanny is still a suspect, according to some of the lawyers. This is nuts. Your thoughts on the Anthony case?
Boy, you know, where to begin? There's so much to talk about. The first reaction I had, of course, when the body was found was, thank goodness
yes.
the defense now will not be able to say reasonable doubt because you can't find the body. You know, the good thing is there's so much more at the crime scene now that connects to what we thought of as the crime scene before, which was the trunk of Casey Anthony's car, at least in terms of the bits and pieces we're hearing. And let me be clear, we're not hearing much. You know, we're only getting drips and drabs. And I'm hopeful that we are correct in inferring certain information from the things we're getting, including, for example, the search warrant. The very fact that a search warrant was executed after the poor child's body was found means that they were able to connect in a forensically significant, scientifically significant way the crime scene and the bag where the body was with the Anthony home. And we know that they took from the home vacuums. Let me stop there for a second and say the reason that's incredibly important is you can't take vacuum cleaners from a home pursuant to a search warrant
yep.
unless the judge believes and thus gives you permission to take things that will likely contain fibers, significant evidence that might match up with whatever they found in the bag or on the body. So, you know, we don't have to speculate much about that because the law is very clear. You have a right to privacy in your home. The stuff that's in there cannot be removed unless a judge says you can take things that are probably related to the crime that you're investigating. Now, one of the pieces of information we all have heard about that is apparently more than credible, and we just don't know the details of how it was situated, is the so-called duct tape that was wrapped around the child's head.
Right.
It's been described as on the mouth, around the head. God bless the manufacturers of duct tape, even underwater for 6 months. Mm-hmm. I think we can safely assume that stuff still sticks. Fingerprints can still be taken. Fibers are likely to still be on the duct tape. Remember during the JonBenet Ramsey case, there was incredible evidence on that duct tape that was put over that child's mouth, duct tape that had fibers that matched Patsy Ramsey's sweater that she was wearing on the night in question. You know, you don't really have to go too far to see the value of fiber evidence. But again, we don't know yet what they found, so we don't know yet what they were looking for in the vacuums, but I can tell you this much. If there's a match, it is going to be as close as you get to a smoking gun in this case. Unfortunately, what we didn't have was any soft tissue, so you can't tell too much about what was going on in the body. But thank God we are also very much at the cutting edge of science when it comes to DNA technology and drug testing, because we know that you can match DNA in the bone. That's good. We know now that as a result that this is little Kaylee. We know that they are talking about drugs. And perhaps, Dana, this may be the most important evidence that no one's really talking about except the fact that they're looking at and talking about drugs. I want to draw a couple of inferences. We know that there has been talk about chloroform.
Yep.
We know that there was chloroform found in the trunk, significant traces of chloroform and so forth. We also know that after the body was found, they did drug tests on the hair. There was still some hair from the child's body remaining on the skull. Anyone who's ever known anything about drug tests knows this. You can do a virtually immediate test in the field to determine whether the hair contains enough evidence of some kind of narcotic or some drug substance that you can go to the judge with that in a matter of minutes and say, Judge, we tested it at the field. There were drugs found in the hair, and as a result, we're going to have to search the Anthony home for the presence of these kinds of drugs. Well, what do we know about what was searched for at the Anthony home? And again, this is separate from chloroform, but there's been an awful lot of talk about Xanax.
Yep.
Now, Dana, you and I have done this story before, whether it's Maddie McCann
mm-hmm.
or the JonBenet Ramsey case. One of the features of Xanax that is very disturbing, and it's almost an earmark for the kind of crime that I always, you know, I'm always super sensitive to the presence of drugs in a little kid's body, because we know that it's an earmark for the crime of child pornography or pimping a child for sex, because we know that these types of drugs like Xanax and chloroform as well are used to sedate the child, they also, which makes the child cooperative. It also it makes the child forget. You know, they have amnestic features, so once the abuse or the photographing is done, they wake up in the morning and they don't recall very much. In other words, they can't tell. So it's a particularly effective drug if you're involved in the crime of either pimping a child or child pornography, for sex or child pornography. But and no one's talking about that in this case, but remember something. Here we have the presence of drugs that were also the topic of conversation in the Maddie McCann case, not chloroform, but other sedatives,
yep.
Topic of conversation in the JonBenet Ramsey case. And one of the things we know about those drugs is they're used for child pornography, but they're terribly dangerous for children. So you or I could take a Xanax and be fine. You give a dose even remotely, you know, adult or more than an adult dose to a child, and there's a great risk of seizure and death. So for those who are wondering why this child might have been sedated, this is pure speculation, but it's certainly possible that she died by accidental overdose of either chloroform or Xanax or some combination thereof. Who knows the reason? You know, my concern is that we should always be asking about child pornography and pimping children when these drugs are present in a little kid's body, because we know that the drugs are commonly used. Doesn't mean it's happening here, but it's something we should be talking about, and no one's talking about it. I'm a little bit frustrated that when people talk about the use of drugs and this little girl's death, they're saying, well, it could have been accidental, therefore it's not first-degree murder. Let me tell you something. If you give your kid so much chloroform or Xanax that they drop dead, that is per se aggravated child abuse, which under Florida law, if the child then dies, that's first-degree murder. So let's not make a mistake about that. And then the real question is anybody going to really believe that Casey Anthony was doping her kid up in order to go party? I mean,
yeah.
She could have left the kid anywhere. She didn't have to dope her up in order to party and leave her in the trunk while she was going having a fun. There's a real question whether the reason this child was being drugged has something to do with that apartment that, by the way, we know of as vacant. Well, when did it become vacant? What was going on in that apartment before it became vacant? Isn't it interesting that Casey Anthony described that as the location where she dropped her kid off, but it just happened to be vacant? You know, if you're just making up big fat lies and you're saying, well, here's where I used to bring my child, was she just lucky that she happened to pick an apartment that was vacant? Or when she dropped the child off there, perhaps things were going on there and it wasn't vacant? These are the questions I want to hear more about. And I hope that ultimately law enforcement will tell us not only that there were drugs in the hair or the marrow, but what kind of drugs they were, how long were the drugs being given to a child. You can measure in a person's hair how long they've been using drugs or drugs have been introduced into their system. So it's a wonderful timeline test. It's not only we found drugs, we found chloroform, we found Xanax in the hair. We found it and it dates back 6 months, a year, what have you. It's going to be very important evidence in this case. And I hope ultimately if there is something more sordid about why the child was being drugged, that we actually hear the truth about it.
You know, and I think you hit the nail on the head. You're spot on, as usual, on this program when you said that finding the body, you know, from the investigative prospect and the DA and whoever, thank God, because now we have forensics. They have most of the skeletal. We'll get a toxicology. We'll come back. And this can all tie in to the internet searches, the chloroform in the car, the things that we're probably not hearing about. And, you know, you're so exact when it comes to, and yes, we're speculating, but here we have Casey Anthony, broke all the time, stealing from her mother, stealing from her child's piggy bank, stealing from her friends, brazenly walking in. And I think, you know, we don't hear much about these check charges now, but if the investigators are doing a good job, and I'm sure they are, the Orange County Sheriff's Department is doing a kick-ass job, they're going to tie all this in together, that here you have this desperate mother who has no money, who is writing rubber checks like you and I would sit down and have a cup of coffee, and why? She's so desperate for money. And maybe that child was a source of income for her, and,
yep.
Well, whatever.
Yeah. And you know what else, Dana? It's so ugly to say this out loud, but we need to say it out loud. Attorney General Gonzalez made a big point of this a couple of years ago when he made it as a priority under the Bush administration when they were doing a lot of work around international sex rings and, you know, the trafficking of children and so forth. He made it a point to say, look, pimping children is a huge problem. Making child pornography is a huge problem. And guess who the number one makers are?
Yep.
Parents. And yet, we know that that is statistically true, and yet when stories come out where that might be the explanation, we look the other way. I want people to start saying, well, wait a minute, if the number one makers of this stuff are parents, why shouldn't we be first and foremost asking questions about that when a child has been drugged or appears missing or dies in what appears to be an odd or unplanned or accidental or suspicious death? You know, we're everywhere else on this story except for what could be the most obvious. And I just think we have to, you know, we have to have the guts to say out loud what the possibilities are. Children don't end up with drugs in their system for just nothing. Parents who don't care about their children can leave them with an aunt, a grandmother, and so forth. You don't have to take the kid with you for weeks on end telling your own parents that you're bringing your child to a babysitter so that you can go to work when everyone knows now you don't have a job. I mean, where was she bringing this child? Every day she was waking up at her parents' home, taking Kaylee someplace, and she said she was dropping her at the babysitter so she could go to her job. We know she didn't have a job, so where was she bringing the kid?
Yeah.
Where was she bringing the kid? If she really just wanted to go party, leave the kid home with her parents.
Yeah.
They were both there full time. So I think, you know, I think we have to use a little bit of common sense. And also, let's be very, very skeptical when we start to hear the defense now talking about the poor meter reader. This is the other topic I know you and I have talked about.
Yep.
You know, what are the big issues? The defense is going to go hog wild on this meter reader for no reason beyond that this was a guy who probably just wanted to help. I mean,
yep.
You remember Richard Jewell was a kind of an eager beaver, wanted to be a hero, and everyone turned on him and said, oh, you know, he's the bomber. He's the Olympic Park bomber because it's weird to want to help a lot. And even defense attorneys back then said, oh, the poor guy, he's innocent, leave him alone. Well, as it turns out, he was innocent.
Yep.
He was just an eager guy who wanted to help. And this sounds like the same story for this man. He was, as lots of people were, both in that community and around the country, wanting to do whatever they could to try to find this little girl. Here's a guy who made a few phone calls, but it is a little strange that he made three calls in a row, claimed to see a bag, and the cops missed it.
Yep.
Worst case scenario, I think, is that the cops are going to look a little stupid, that they couldn't find it, that some guy found it, but they couldn't. On the other hand, maybe it wasn't the same bag.
Yep.
I'd like to know the answer to the question. When the meter reader in August said he saw a bag in that roughly in that area, now that he knows that this bag actually contained the child's body, did somebody say to him, well, were they the same bag or did they look different? Because
yep.
Maybe the bag that he saw in August was just a bag of trash and somebody picked it up. Maybe, you know, maybe there's nothing but coincidence to the explanation. But because it's a little odd, the defense is going to try, you watch, they're going to try to turn the meter reader into the real killer,
yep.
Some weird suspicious guy who maybe was involved with whoever the nanny, Zanny the nanny was friendly with, and he did something crazy. And they'll make a story up that is cockamamie, irrational, not based on real evidence. They'll slam the guy. They'll slander him. They will use him like trash. Just to distract attention from the mountain of evidence against Casey. And the worst thing I can say about our legal system is we don't stop that. We don't have rules that prevent defense attorneys from falsely pointing the finger at not only an innocent guy, but a guy who was trying to help.
Yeah.
So he can be slapped around gratuitously for strategic reasons, and the defense attorneys will do it until they, you know, no matter what the consequences are. The guy could commit suicide. The defense won't care. They'll keep blaming him.
Yep.
And there's absolutely no basis for it beyond the, well, it's kind of weird for a guy to go make three phone calls in August and then happen to be the one who finds the body back in December. Remember, Dana, back in August, I think 11th, 12th, and 13th are the days he made calls, and it was like around 4 days after that Tropical Storm Faye dumped unbelievable amounts of water in that area, so whatever might have been there was buried.
Yep.
You know, bags filled with bones, they're going to sink into the muck of the snake-filled swamp that was. And perhaps when things dry up, you know, what's ever buried rises up again and it becomes visible. I think it doesn't matter, frankly, even if the defense is going to say, well, you know, the guy's weird, the cops screwed up. At the end of the day, you can throw those darts every place in this case, and there's still a mountain of evidence implicating Casey Anthony.
Yeah, it's not going to mean a darn thing. Just before I let you go, Wendy, Wendy Murphy is here. Of course, you know her book is And Justice for Some. This trial, I don't think, will even come close to going ahead in March. There'll be delays and all sorts of things, but the possibility has risen as far as no trial, as far as coming forward and trying to plea bargain this as a DA. Do you even go for that, or no way?
Well, two things. One is, before they found the body, the defense was on, you know, a rocket ship plan to get this case to trial as fast as they could, because they know they would have a better chance without a body, and that's why we're talking about a trial in March. As soon as the body was found, they put the brakes on. Screech! And we won't see a trial even in 09. I'm certain about that. As for plea bargains, and by the way, that's pretty shameful, too. You know, that child, although she's dead and the suspect is her mother, she's entitled to justice. The public wants to see the resolution.
Yep.
You shouldn't be able to drag this case out until we, you know, all the witnesses drop dead. But the defense will try to do that because they want to delay the inevitable. They know this is a case they probably can't win unless something weird happens. And they're going to hope and pray and try to create weirdness and whip us all into a frenzy about how mothers couldn't possibly kill their children and leave them in a trunk, and that's just not how she, you know what I mean? They're mm-hmm. going to take advantage of our bias and our desire to believe that mothers are pretty much good people and would never kill their own. They're going to do everything they can to take advantage of that. And the longer they wait, you know, the emotions fade and so forth, the better for the defense. That's unfortunate that we don't make the case go to trial faster just because it's fairer to the justice system and to the public interest in making sure that trials don't become circuses. Where I think we might potentially see a plea bargain is if the Anthonys themselves, and I mean Cindy and George,
yep,
they're charged, and that may well happen. I think that at a minimum, there's good reason to believe they were involved in the cover-up.
Yep.
And I say that based on the fact that this search warrant in their home produced things like a desire to search for, and then they found, police found fertilizer. You know, they're not farmers, and they had fertilizer in their home. Fertilizer, and I worked for the Medical Examiner in Massachusetts for years, fertilizer is notoriously used to speed up decomposition of dead bodies and cover the smell during the rotting process.
Mm-hmm.
They had that in their home. You know, what? That's weird that they would have that in their home. Were they part of it? Did they not discuss it or talk about it? Why not say to the police, hey, you know, we don't know what our daughter was doing, but you know what's weird? We got a bag of fertilizer here that we know nothing about. They
yep.
didn't do that. There's some suggestion that they gave the wrong hairbrush to police that didn't have Kaylee's hair, had Casey's hair in it. You know, I don't know. I think they're in trouble. If they get charged, and I think that they probably will, one of the things we're going to see is an attempt to use them against their daughter and vice versa, use one side to squeeze the other to make the truth come out. You know, thus far we've seen big fat lies from Casey. Shame on her. Shame on her. And a whole lot of dog and pony show from Cindy. Not George so much, but Cindy's been on every talk show for the longest time talking about fake Kaylee sightings in Texas and here, there, and everywhere, and let's hunt for Kaylee and,
yep,
you know, send money here and let's go set up a search team and blah, blah, blah. At a minimum, I'm glad that the body has been found because she'll shut up now.
Yeah.
And we won't have to buy into that dog and pony show. But, you know, watch, she's going to become deadly silent now. The woman who couldn't take advantage of us enough and pull at our heartstrings. Oh, I'm the grandmother. Help me find her. She's alive. You know, now that there's a lot of heat on them, how come she's so silent all of a sudden? Why doesn't she get her big mouth on television again and let us ask her the tough questions like, what did the police take out of your home? And what the hell were you doing with fertilizer? And why'd you lie? And did you give him the brush? The hairbrush with the wrong hair in it? Why can't she face the music now that we are getting access to information that raises questions about her? How come suddenly she's hiding behind closed doors? Shame on her. So I'm looking forward to the pressure mounting against Cindy and George. I'm hoping that it becomes fruitful. I don't like pressuring anybody gratuitously. I want to see the pressure on Cindy and George become a way of getting Casey to talk more about the truth, which will be the only way Kaylee will see justice done. And I realize, you know, I'm talking about her as if she's alive. I understand she isn't, but we are now the voice for Kaylee. We, yep, the people, have to speak up for her, stand in her shoes, and scream and yell. Because if her mother wasn't the suspect, her mother would be screaming and yelling for justice. And whenever a child dies and the suspect is the parents, it's incumbent upon the people to stand up and scream and yell. Because if we don't do it, then it's too easy, for the noise to die down and for justice not to be served.
As, you know, true words are spoken from anyone. Wendy, thank you. I'm sure you and I will be talking about this case more in the future. Happy holidays to you.
Likewise. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. We'll talk real soon, Dana. Thank you very much.
Okay, Wendy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Wendy Murphy, the author of And Justice for Some. And say what you want, Wendy brings out a whole new perspective when you look at the investigation. Yeah, are we speculating some? Yeah, sure we are. But you got to look at the big picture. She's a trained professional when it comes to this. The Orange County Sheriff's Department, the DA, have released a ton of stuff. And I was scratching my head wondering, why are they sending all this out? But really, a lot of what they sent out probably would never be brought up in trial. I'm talking about the early transcripts and the videos and all that sort of stuff. Is there a lot more that we don't know about? Probably. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens now with this trial. And I agree, it's not going to be anytime soon. I could be wrong. But someone who has been covering this case at scaremonkeys.com is my old friend Red, and I wanted to bring Red on the phone, but no, he's still there. Just hang on. Are you still there, the top banana? Yeah, you're there.
Hey, Dana, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good. The phone's kind of wacky. The light's flashing, and then it goes off, or maybe I'm hallucinating, but you got to love Wendy Murphy.
Oh, my God. That's a tough act to follow.
Did you know she was a cheerleader?
I read that.
Serious. Yeah, she was an NFL cheerleader.
I read that on her bio today when I was doing it, and yeah. I started Googling for NFL cheerleading pictures of Wendy Murphy.
Absolutely. What a babe, eh? You know, she's got like five kids. She goes out and she puts bad guys away. She's,
oh, my God.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
She says what everybody thinks, and the funny part about it tonight, Dana, was I have actually been biting my lip on this child porn angle,
yep,
and lo and behold, she comes out with it like nothing.
Well, you know, it's something that should be talked about. The Casey broke, stealing money even from her kid's piggy bank. The beautiful little angelic daughter and the garbage cans and the freaks that are out there would take advantage of that. I don't know. You know, time will tell. We'll see what happens. But this case is far from being over. I don't believe there's going to be a trial anytime soon, but we're going to keep hearing about it. Poor old Leonard Padilla, he's run out of things to talk about. He's talking about his kid's cat now.
I heard that, and I actually emailed the Nancy Grace show and said, I can guarantee you I've got better pet stories.
You know, and I've had Leonard on the program, you know that, two or three times, and initially I think maybe he was a part of this, but when it became the search in the river, the Econ River, whatever it was called, Murphy or whatever the other guy's name, Myrtle, or the internet guy that was running around, and they found the bag of bones, which actually was sticks and rocks, and it started to go south right from there. Like, what in the Sam hell is Nancy Grace and even Greta doing bringing these people on, because they're contributing zip?
Yeah. I mean, in the beginning, everyone, I think, was caught up in the moment and in the story, so they were kind of not probably listening to exactly what the people were saying. But if you, the more and more the story went on, and the story slowed down to the point where you would generally need new stuff or new material to actually have a show about the case, you started hearing the same thing going over and over. Or you would hear a theory semi-changed to fit whatever the news was of the day, and it was and it kind of got to the point where it was like, wait a minute, you can't pass opinion off as expert fact as if you're digging up some news information. And it even has recently gotten to the point with Leonard on Nancy Grace that all he's doing is repeating what some of the reporters are saying, and it's kind of like, well, if we needed if we needed a puppet, I mean, go home. You know, go home at this point and have some. I mean, what we've always demanded, and you have as well, is that there be respect given to Kaylee.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I mean, I did a long post on this morning. You know, about it that, you know, unfortunately, her family and the people that surrounded her didn't do that.
Nope.
And I think in many respects, and I think the Anthonys resent it, is that the people that may have loved this girl the most were the people she never knew.
Yeah.
And nobody, and I understand the grandparents are put into a pickle, but they are the grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't ever but get anything but unconditional love out of a grandchild. And and now they find themselves needing a lawyer. And as Wendy Murphy said, potentially facing obstruction of justice charges.
Yep. You know, and it's just so sad. And you know me, I'm an easygoing guy. Very rarely do I rant or get carried on about something, but occasionally I do. And one thing before I let you go, Red, is the poor meter reader and Tim Miller, and that's why I wanted to bring Tim on tonight. You know, they're going to be chastised. I've searched for people. The people that don't know anything about searching are the ones that are criticizing. Could it have been a deputy that was just lazy and took a look and said, there's nothing there, or was he scared away from a snake, or was this bag under 4 feet of water, or was he just lazy? You know, who knows? You know, people make mistakes, but god darn it, all of a sudden you get these lizard lawyers and even Geraldo, you know, coming forward, and you know, he's not talking about his friendship with Jose Baez, but all of a sudden everything is a conspiracy, and this guy Kronk or Conk or whatever his name is, and I apologize if I'm not pronouncing it right, is going to be put on the hot seat. And you know, you got to wonder why people don't want to get involved.
Well, you bring up a fantastic point, Dana, and it's, you wonder why people don't get involved, and it is kind of because of this situation, where we had an unprecedented situation with the Kaylee Anthony search of so many people,
yep.
Not only searching with organized members of law enforcement and Texas Equisearch, but you also had a lot doing them on their own. And you had a lot. I mean, I don't completely agree with everything that was done outside of law enforcement. However, there were a couple ones that were professionally done that were searches. Imagine if they came across this bag. And what was the first criticism that's kind of been said is, well, why didn't they open the bag? Could you imagine what the defense would be saying now if this meter reader had actually opened up the bag and then tainted what was ever inside the bag? It would all be contaminated. It would all be, you know, they wouldn't be able to bring it into court because, you know, the evidence was contaminated. I mean, the defense is going to say everything and anything that is ultimately a lie. I mean, which is sad.
Yep.
And the fact of the matter is, and Wendy Murphy went through it perfectly tonight, there is so much evidence that is going directly back to that Anthony home, because no judge in their right mind would have signed a search warrant for this kind of stuff.
Yep.
And you talk about the duct tape. One of the things that Wendy didn't say was, following the duct tape being found, the Anthonys, Cindy, George, and Lee were all compelled to have their fingerprints taken.
Yep.
Which means there was obviously fingerprints on this duct tape. So are they letting out everything probably right now? No.
No.
Does the defense want to let this stuff out? Never in a million years. However, you did see this evening, or actually today, it was on one of the local Fox stations out of Orlando, that the Anthony's attorney is blabbing that none of the stuff that was taken from the home recently belonged to his clients. Well, isn't that convenient that he put that out there? So, you know, I mean, but they've got an attorney themselves. You see tomorrow that I believe depositions were supposed to start in the Zanny case, that lawsuit. Those have been postponed. Go figure.
Yeah.
It's kind of probably hard to take a deposition with somebody who doesn't exist.
Yeah, no, exactly. And duct tape is an investigator's best friend. This story is long from over. The truth needs to come out. It will eventually.
And you know the great part about it, Dana, and I can't remember which one had said this, but there will. I really find it hard to believe that this thing will be plea bargained. This thing is, unless she admits complete and utter that she's guilty.
I agree.
This thing's going to trial.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was Diane Fanning that mentioned that.
And there's no way that ultimately, I mean, they can talk all, you know, they can talk up the meter reader all they want. If the defense really wants to find out the truth. Sitting right in jail, they can ask her.
Yeah, there's only one person that knows really what happened. Like Tim Miller said, there's only one person that should be blamed, and she's sitting in the Orange County Jail right now. Red, thank you, my friend.
Thank you so much, Dana. Fantastic show tonight.
You and I will be getting together here before the end of the year, and our friend Robin Sachs, ADA, and going over the year in crime. I'm not sure what date yet, but it's something to look forward to.
Certainly will, Dana.
I'll get back to you about that. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Red, the top banana at Scared Monkeys. And again, the creme de la creme of blogs is scaredmonkeys.com. I want to thank all my guests this evening and remind you to check out our webpage at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live. You can pick up podcasts of past shows, our daily commentary, and all that sort of stuff. Thank you very much. For those of you that do celebrate, have a very Merry Christmas, and we'll see you again with a live show right after Christmas. The daily commentaries will continue every day, and our next show will be a year in review. Stay tuned to staredmonkeys.com for the date of that program. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.